Okay, so the shiur tonight is about freedom. Okay, the Torah's idea of freedom, cheiros. And I want to start with a little bit of an introductory question, which has nothing quite to do with freedom right now, and maybe we'll come back to it. But kind of open-ended question. I'm not really looking for answers right now, but it's still. Here. So let's just, it involves some basics. So if you had to say, you have in the Torah, you have two types of holy days. Okay, you have Shabbos and Yom Tov. Right? So Shabbos and Yom Tov, I'm referring to, let's say, the festivals. So Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Okay? So if I had to ask you, what's the difference between, what's the ideas? What's the idea of Shabbos versus what's the idea of Yom Tov? What's the main idea? The concept of Shabbos is celebrating blank, and the festival of Yom Tov is celebrating blank. Just as a basic. Anyone? That I like.
Masturbations.
Okay, which one's that? Okay, so Shabbos is celebrating. It's that God created the world on 6 days, and He rests on the seventh day. It's celebrating the creation. It's commemorating the creation. We think about the creation. It's a day which is devoted towards thinking about God as the creator of the universe. Okay, the source of everything which exists. And Yom Tov? Chaim? Kedushas Yisrael. Okay.
Our relationship with Hashem.
Okay. Our relationship with Hashem. Okay. Whose relationship with Hashem? Okay, good. That's what Chaim is saying. It's celebrating not to God as the creator of the universe. That's Shabbos. But Yom Tov is we're celebrating the specific relationship that God has to the Jewish people. That God relates to us, what we call Hashgacha Pratis. Okay, that God has treats us in a certain way. For instance, each of the holidays has a different theme. So on Pesach, it's that God redeemed us. It's Geula. It's Man Geula Seinu, right? It's the time that God redeemed us from Mitzrayim. Took us out of Mitzrayim. On Shavuos, it's Man Matan Torah Seinu. God, another facet of God's providence to Jewish people, is He gave us the Torah. And then on Sukkot, what do you say Sukkot is celebrating? Well, historically, what is it celebrating? If you take the history of the events, so you had Pesach is going out of Egypt, Shavuos is giving the Torah, and Sukkot, that God caused us, protected us in the desert for 40 years. Okay, so it's not exactly a particular event, like taking us out of Egypt or and giving of the Torah, but it's more the constant, continual hashgacha, continual providence that God gave us the clouds and He protected us and the sukkah reminds us of that and He took care of our food and there's hashgacha, there's providence in particular events, major events in the history of the Jewish people, which is going out of Mitzrayim, Geula, which is redemption, and then Torah, and then there's like the general hashgacha, the continual hashgacha for 40 years in the desert. Okay, and that's another facet of the hashgacha that we, the providence that we reflect upon. So the holidays as a unit reflect upon the idea of God as He relates to the Jewish people. And that's why on the holidays there's a simcha, there's a mitzvah of simcha, which is to be festive and joy on Yom Tov. We drink wine, we eat meat. There's a certain simcha when we reflect upon the fact that the God who is the creator of the universe, the God of Shabbos, relates to small man, relates to the Jewish people, and gives us the opportunity to gain knowledge of Him, gives us a Torah, and protects us insofar as we strive to gain to get closer to God. Okay, so that's a source of great simcha for us. Now, if you have these, so the three Yom Tov, the three festivals are different. They each have different themes, but our two of them are tied together somehow. Which are those? Pesach and Shavuos. How are they tied together? Okay, yeah, so on the surface, I'm talking about what we're involved in now. We're in the time period now, which is, so to speak, the connecting time period between Pesach and Shavuos. So on Pesach, we started counting the days of the Omer. Okay, for the second day of Pesach, we start counting 49 days, 7 weeks, until Shavuos. Right, and Sefer Chinuch ties it clearly that it's like a count of the days towards from the Yetzias Mitzrayim, from going out of Egypt, 49 days later, when they received the Torah. And it's interesting, is like, what exactly is the connection? I mean, on the surface, you say they're different things. There's going out of Mitzrayim is one thing. Receiving Torah is another thing. Sukkot is another thing. The redemption, you know, protecting us in the desert. But it seems like somehow there's a continuity of between a relationship between the between Pesach and Shavuos, between the going out of Mitzrayim and the giving of Torah. Okay, and let's just keep that thought in the background. What exactly? There's a lot of things you could say about that. What it is, but I'm going for something particular, but which I think maybe with what we talk about tonight will help us come back to that. Okay, so just leave that in the back of your mind. Okay, now let's talk about Cheiros, about freedom, and the Torah, freedom and the Torah. So I think that Chazal, there's a statement of Chazal which I'm going to focus on specifically, which is a little bit, you'd think, I guess you'd call it counterintuitive. Not what one would think about the Torah. Okay? And that is that I think oftentimes a person relates to the Torah and halacha and the mitzvos as something which is restrictive. Right? After all, there is a lot of laws. There are a lot of halachos. Throughout one's life, throughout one's day, there's all kinds of positive things. You got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. Right, it's, if anything, one would say there's not much freedom in the Torah. Right, the Torah is great, but one would say it's not. It doesn't really give one much freedom. In fact, some people would say they have a hard time keeping Torah because they need their freedom. Like I said, I need my own freedom. I can't deal with that kind of a thing. It's too restrictive for me. I need freedom, which is fine. That's the way it would seem. But Chazal say quite the opposite. Okay. They say, it's based on a pasuk. It's talking about the writing was charos, was carved onto the luchos. So it says charos means carved. It says don't read it charos, but read it cheros. Cheros means freedom. It's the same word. It's like a play on the word. It means it can mean freedom. So it says, because she'in lecha ben choren, ela mi she'osek betalmud Torah. Kol mi she'osek betorah. Okay, fine. There's no free person. Okay, cheros means freedom. There's no free person, but someone who's involved in the Torah. Okay, there's no truly free person, but someone who's involved in the Torah. Okay? And the question is it would seem to be, it seems to be a bold statement. Bold and somewhat, you think, false? You think, first, it's saying two things. First of all, how is a person who's involved in the Torah free? What does the Torah have to do with freedom? If anything, it's restrictive. And secondly, there's no free person, but someone who's involved in the Torah? You want to say somehow, you give it a story about why the Torah is free, but there's no free person but someone who's involved in the Torah? I mean, why is that? I mean, there are other free people, right? There's no such thing as a free person, and no one. There's no truly free person. Why not? There's a lot of free people. But a guy, he's not a slave, he's not a servant, he's a free guy, he's his own boss, whatever. I mean, what kind of statement is it? There's no truly free person but someone who's involved in the Torah. Okay? That's my question. Yeah, Chaim. Okay, good, excellent. Okay, I forgot to mention that point. Yes. In a certain sense, right, we do refer to ourselves as an Eved Hashem, a servant of God. So one would think, and this is another facet, actually, is like we celebrate, what do we celebrate on Pesach? So we celebrate the Geula, redemption. We were slaves to Paro, and now we're free. God took us out and freed us. Redemption. Me'avdus l'cheiros. Right? From slavery to freedom. But it would seem it's not true. We're still slaves. We're just servants. We're servants of Paro, servants of God. Now, we'd rather be servants of God. He's not as harsh as Paro, or compassionate or whatever. But to say that we're free, to say that now we're redeemed, we're free, not quite. We just changed masters to a better master. So if a slave is sold from one master to another master, you wouldn't say he has freedom. You may say he's happy about it, but to say that he's free and to celebrate the redemption, he's not quite redeemed. He just took on a new master, albeit better. So you see, and we do use the term Avdei Hashem, right? We're Avdei Hashem, servants of God. So that doesn't sound, isn't servant and freedom a contradiction? Right? Okay, good. Thank you. Alrighty. Any thoughts? Okay, let's take an example. Okay, I think an example may be illustrative. And then maybe we're going to have to, you know. I mean, I think you guys are saying good.
But let's take an example of someone with an addiction. Okay? Let's say a guy a drug addiction, for instance. But it could be any addiction. It could be it could be to food, it could be to sex, it could be to money, it could be to power, it could be to whatever it is. I mean, you name your addiction. Okay? But I'm just, I'm picking drugs. Okay? So, let's say you have a guy, two guys. Okay, one guy who is totally addicted to drugs. Okay, absolutely. Okay, cannot control whatsoever. Okay, he's always doing drugs. Always, stealing money to get drugs, to buy drugs. He's always getting himself into trouble. He's always, losing his jobs because he's whatever. He can't focus. Whatever. So they paint the picture of a guy who's like a real, he's really got problems because of his addiction. Then you take a guy, but no one's telling him what to do. I mean, he's free. In a certain sense, he's free. He doesn't have anybody. He just does what he wants to do. And every day he says, I want to take drugs. And he doesn't. And now I want to steal money to buy drugs. And he doesn't. There's no one at all telling him anything. Then you have a guy who's this fella. And he wises up one day. Or his family wises up one day, and they throw him into some sort of a rehab center. Okay, and in this rehab center, they're basically it's a good rehab center, which is one which is very strict, and they have very very tight rules. Okay, and they basically have a tight regiment, which they lock down on drugs and this and that, and they make him go to classes and learn these 12-step programs and all kinds of a whole series, highly interventional and highly restrictive. And and not only that, they tell him that these programs is something which you're going to have to basically be on pretty much your entire life, okay? And you're going to have to be constantly involved with the program, let's say AA or NA or whatever, and you're going to constantly have to be helping other people out and going to meetings and like spend your life in the rehab. And there's all kinds of rules. You have to spend a few hours a day going over the steps, and you have to always be thinking about these things and helping other people out. And there's all kinds of rules, and it's important. And the rehab center, they'll train you into realizing how important it is that you follow all these rules. Okay, this is true. That's what happens. Now, it's a very restrictive program and lifestyle. And someone who manages to keep up with the restrictions is the guy who's going to be able to stay clean. And the guy who slips is not going to be clean. But it's a lot of restrictions. So I'll ask you, which guy is free? If any. Or which guy is more free? How about that? Okay? Which guy is a more free person? The guy who can do whatever he wants? Or the guy who is under this severe, heavy system of this rehab program.
The first guy can't really do whatever he in a sense he can, but he's still he's being pushed by one thing constantly.
Okay.
He can't really do whatever he wants.
Okay, he can't do it. Why can't he do what he wants? So he's a slave to the addiction. But what about that's what he wants? So that is what he wants? He'll say, look, that's what I want.
He doesn't. Look, to some degree it's true. He doesn't really want.
Right. Right. And the answer is he doesn't want it. He doesn't want it. These guys will all tell you. I mean, it depends on the stage of addiction. But in general, at a certain stage, this type of guy wises up and realizes, I don't want this. I wish I wouldn't have this. Unfortunately, I made mistakes when I was a kid and whatever. I'm not saying everyone has this realization, but a lot of the people have this realization, is I don't want this. I don't want it. I want to have a normal life. I want to have a family. I want to have a job. I want to make a living. I want to be a good person. I want to whatever it is I want to be doing. I don't want to ever just be the guy who's a druggie who's my whole life is just set on drugs. Like, I doesn't want that. But he can't help it. He's a slave to like an unruly part of his nature.
Yeah.
call it his instincts, his emotions, his addiction, his whatever it is. But there's the him which underlies the person himself who has self-interests and his, who wants the betterment of himself, he wants a good life, he wants whatever it is. And then there is, there's like, he has these, this component, this instinct, which is forcing him, which is enslaving him, and preventing him from being able to do that which he could see. In a moment of clarity, when the guy's not on drugs, in a moment of clarity, whatever it is, he could see, he could think about the thing. He does is, every time I do this, I kill myself. What am I doing? Destroying myself. My life. Look at the guy's life. It's crazy. All those other friends are just doing normal things and having a good life and all that. And this guy, he's, he has his, however long it is, of pleasure or escapism or whatever you want to call it. But he says, this isn't what I want. This isn't good for me. Okay? This isn't good for me. But he can't help it. And I'd say even the guy who doesn't realize that, let's say the guy who's the druggie, but he doesn't realize it, it's still not good for him, and it's still not in his best interest. He just, certain times the addiction is such that it's got him, and it's preventing him from being able to see the truth. But we could see it. I mean, he's not going to say we could see it, but we could see it. If you look at it, you'll see the guy is, you look at the guy. I mean, look at the guy. He's not living like a normal person. He's destroying himself. He doesn't have any of the standard things that could be that people have. He's always escaping from the world. It's not a, what kind of life is that? But he may not know it. He's not. He may think he's free. He may even think he's free. He may say, "Listen, every day I decide that's what I want to do." But we realize it's not in his best interest. Freedom there. He's not free to do what's good for a person. What's in his best interest. Sometimes he's blinded to the point that he may think it's in his best interest, but he doesn't, and it'll catch up with him. I mean, the guy's. I mean, look at the guy. The guy's not happy. But, so he has, he's, so to speak, he has an internal master. An internal master. No external master at all. But he has a strong, strong internal master, which is very, very harsh and very demanding. Okay? The guy who's in, this rehab program, he realizes, he decides that this internal master is too hard. And he decides that he got to get rid of it. He got to break the shackles of this internal master. And he has to somehow, this is crazy. He has to be, he wants freedom to be able to pursue a good life. Whatever a good life means. Okay, just a common good life. Life of happiness, whatever. Well, the normal things which are good in life. A job, a family, whatever, you know, whatever it is. And he realizes that he must subordinate himself to an external master in order to attain an internal freedom. In order to free himself from the internal master, he must submit to an external servitude. But that's what really gives him freedom. The guy who manages to be successful in keeping to his 12-step program is the guy who is really internally free. He's able to, but look, there are some restrictions, but that's the world. The world, there are certain things. If you want to be free, you have to restrain yourself. If you want to really be free to pursue your own best interest and to pursue the good, so then there, especially a guy who has himself caught in an addiction, he has no choice but to have a lifelong sentence of being involved in these 12-step programs. That's just the way it is. But that's a small price to pay and a small servitude for true freedom. That taskmaster, that taskmaster is much lighter, and it's enabling him to do that which he wants, that which is good. The guy, he wants a family, he wants a job, he wants a normal life, and these rules, these laws that he has to keep, enable him to live a normal life. That's the idea. He's free to pursue a life which is good for him. The guy who's the addict is not free to pursue the good, to pursue a good life, because he is an internal taskmaster. Yes? Okay. Yes?
How come the guy who makes the choice to take the drugs isn't a free guy? I can't be a stupid free guy. He can do what he wants. He's not smart. Why are you saying
I guess it depends. I guess my assumption is, okay, and you could argue the assumption. I don't think it'll be a good argument, but you could argue that that the assumption is that that's not, it's not a good happy life. It's a, it's a, it's a miserable life.
But why is he not free?
Oh, because he's not, he thinks he's free, but he's not free. I'm saying freedom is the ability of the person to pursue that which is good, that which is good for him. No. Because he's really restrained. In other words, it's the, just that the freedom has gotten his mind also. In other words, it's not, there's the reality of that which is good for him. And it's just that the slavery is so, like, let's say a master convinces his slave that he, you know, like a Stockholm Syndrome type of thing. He convinces his slave this is what he wants. But he's not really free. It's terrible for him. You know, or, you know, like a woman is beaten, or the guy convinces her this is what she wants, or whatever. I mean, it's mind control. So it's not really, it was good. It's not really in their best, in his best interest. He thinks it is, but that's part of the slavery. He's enslaved to the point which it corrupts his mind. And it causes him to think that, but that's not really, really freedom. He's free to do. It's not just a psychological, like a feeling of freedom. It's a reality that you're free to do that which is good for you. And he's not free to do that which is good for him. He's just the addiction managed to convince him that is good for him. But he's not free to assess that. He's not really free to make the assessment and to sit back and consider both possibilities. Say, should I do drugs or should I do the other thing? It's like he can't go through that whole process. It's like he's not even, it prevents him from doing that. He's not free to assess.
I see that actually. If you say it's where it's so bad that he's not free to assess. It's like you wouldn't say a guy who's freedom to make decision A or decision B.
Right, that's true. I say he's not free to assess. I think that's a good way to say it.
I
think so, because I think if you make the assessment, it's a miserable life. So anyone, the fact that he's not able to see that, or he thinks that it's good, it's because he's not free to make that assessment.
But if you're free to make the assessment, you have to miss a subtle detail or something.
Right.
Choose the wrong path.
Yeah, right. I would agree with
that.
Right, I would agree with that. Right, I hear that. Right. Right. Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, it's worth thinking about. And we'll see. Maybe when we carry over to Torah, it will be more significant than this example. Yes. Yeah.
So that's what he's saying. Can't you have an individual who enters in the model when someone's addicted to a certain emotion or pleasure,
right,
or something like that? But if a person is somewhat rational thinking, not even somewhat rational, but is rational thinking, it seems to be you were saying that if someone's addicted to something, he doesn't have, even his rational thought is taken away from him. Because even though he doesn't want it, it's because rationally doesn't make any sense, then he's still going to have to do it.
Right.
So if a person understands rationally that certain things can be had in moderation, doesn't you necessarily need the Torah to hear? I mean, like, can't someone just,
right,
like, say, I understand that this is
okay
bad for me, I'm only going to have, like, one
okay
cigarette or whatever a day, and
okay
you do things in moderation, you
okay
don't necessarily need the Torah
okay
to free it.
Okay, okay, so let's transition to the Torah. Okay, so far we're just talking about drugs. Okay, but but let's transition to the Torah. All right, here's a good question. Okay. So the point, I think, which this the example illustrates is that freedom, first of all, that, and this is the point I guess Dan was saying at the very beginning, is that there's not, you can't just talk about freedom from an external master, but there's an internal master, which is often more pervasive, and he has the ability to control your mind than your ability to think. Right, it's a more harsher master, and the freedom is the ability to free, largely the ability to free yourself from that, from this internal taskmaster. Now, this internal taskmaster, this internal thing, addiction is an extreme example, but I mean, especially drug addiction is an extreme example. But a person has many, many addictions. Okay, whatever in his life. Okay, which I would say is I guess a different word for an addiction, which is less, a bit less strong and more easy for us to relate to, is like a compulsion. Okay, a compulsion is that we have many things that we have like a compulsion to do, even though we could say when you have a compulsion, it means you have a sense that this isn't really what you want. Some sort of subtle sense, but you just feel compelled to do it. Right? So addictions may not be all too common, perhaps, but compulsions, I think, are something we could all relate to. Right? Many times a day, we feel compelled to do whatever it is. Whether we feel compelled to bicker with our friend or whatever it is, or to be involved in gossip, or we feel involved to be involved in and compelled to eat something that we shouldn't be eating, or whatever, you know, whatever. I mean, personally, you can think of your own things that you have compulsions to do, but I mean, in any area of life, I mean, we encounter many, many decisions, right, throughout the day. We're always making decisions. We're always faced with decisions to make, how we're going to spend our time, how we're gonna, whatever the case may be, and we have to make these decisions somehow. And the decisions mean going from the ordinary decisions, which don't mean that much, to major decisions about our life. I mean, throughout our lives, we're making all kinds of decisions on many, many different levels. And I'd say, in general, we're we have much compulsion to act and to make our decisions. And if a person assesses the thing, I think we'll find we're not that free. And also, I mean, we may kind of, you have to kind of take a step back. Because you may not notice it, but if you think about it, how often, how many things you do, which you just kind of feel like, I'm just going to do it. I just have to. This is just what I'm going to do now. I'm doing this because of whatever. I'm not thinking about it. You know, or I just kind of push it out of your head. I push it out of your head. I mean, there's, again, in all areas of life, okay, be it in, you know, in one's physical instincts, the sexual or the repetitive, be it in one's interpersonal dealings with their friend, even how one spends their time, being, you know, whatever the case may be, whether it relates to responsibilities, time which they spend on work or on studies or on what they would think they would assess as wasting their time. I mean, there's a wide range of different areas in one's life. But, you know, the way they relate to their family, the way they relate to their job, right? Be compelled to work, like a workaholic. I mean, there's all kinds of. I mean. You have to think, each person has to come out and think into their own things. But life is filled with compulsions. And our energies are always being pulled in all different directions. And I'd say to the degree that that's the case, we're not free. Because anytime we have these compulsions, it means the feeling of the compulsion is like, this isn't quite what I want. Or, I don't know, but I'm just going to do it. Like, there's a certain, the compulsion is a master. I mean, you're a slave to that compulsion. And it may not be as strong and harsh as a drug addiction, and it may not be as clearly self-destructive as an addiction. So it may not be as socially looked down upon. But in one's life, I think if one looks into oneself, we'll realize that we're very often compelled to do many things that are not in our best interests. We would think, in a moment of clarity, we would think that it doesn't really make sense to do. How many things are there that, in a moment of clarity, we realize, I shouldn't be doing that? But we do it, because we're compelled.
So a lot of time that can just be guilt.
Could be. We could feel compelled. That could be another compulsion. Guilt could be a compulsion preventing me from being able to enjoy myself, because I feel like I shouldn't be doing that, and I feel too guilty. It could be the opposite. Maybe I should go enjoy myself and have a fun time, but I can't do that because I'm compelled by some superego to sit and, I don't know, be an ascetic. An ascetic's compulsion is that he's always, he can't enjoy himself. So, I mean, compulsions could be, that's another compulsion. That's my point, is that you got really lots of different feelings inside of you, which are all forcing you to do things which aren't necessarily in your best interest. And I'd say, insofar as one has those, that those impede a person's freedom to really pursue what he wants to do. Right? So, like for instance, it's like a guy, let's say a guy who has weight problems, you know, so he's compelled to eat. And by going on a diet, one hopes to try to attain a freedom to be able to learn self-control. And the diet is really attaining a successful diet. I mean, the problem is diets don't really help you because, like, that's why most diets you end up going back to, you lose weight and then you go back, right? So why? Because you're not really getting the freedom. You're under the sway of some other strong emotion that you want to look good or you want to be healthy or whatever, you know, some sort of other kick, and you go one way. But you haven't really worked on the internal freedom. You've just kind of countered it with another, you know, and you're going in a tug of war between different emotions, but then the guy's going to go back because he can't really kick himself of the compulsion of that part of his personality, which is really controlling him. So he's being controlled by different, you know, he may feel guilty, whatever the case is. So, but a successful diet, if a person manages to make a diet which involves like a change of life, and it involves a little bit of thought and rationality, and it is a guy who realizes this is compelling me to do something, and I don't want to be unhealthy, I want to be healthy, I want to be live long, I want to be able to enjoy my life and not to feel like, whatever the case, whatever arguments he would give, and realize it's not in my best interest to be overeating, and then he could make a change in his personality and overcome the addiction, and that would be a gaining a degree of freedom. Now that person, and you could argue, is a slave to his diet, but not really, because the diet is what he really wants. He wants a life of control and of health and of feeling good about himself. So it's he has to follow the rules of the diet. The diet is like the rehab program, but you know, a little more real life to us. Is you know, it's not as intense of an example. But that could exist in many areas of a person's life, and in many midos. A person may be involved in gossip or involved in pettiness, let's say. He's always fighting and always competing with these other guys, like keeping up with the Joneses. Like that's going to be a problem. Is the guy is a slave to basically keeping up with everybody else. He can't just do what he wants to do because he's always busy trying to keep up with everybody else. So he becomes a slave to that. And one could have to somehow work on that and overcome that. So the Torah, and this comes back to the Torah, is the multiple restrictions of the Torah and the multiple commandments of the Torah essentially are God, or I don't know if this is the only purpose of the Torah, but they function to really free a person from all those different areas, all those different compulsions. And the Torah is constructed in a way that the multiplicity of halachos and the multiplicity of the different areas of the Torah, different mitzvos, which are targeted in all different areas, whether they're mitzvos regarding the eating or the sexual or the way you relate to people, you know, like your interactions with people or the way you spend your time and the way you... You know, when you wake up, when you go to sleep, your times, your schedule, there's all kinds of, I mean, the Torah is all over the place. I mean, it's halakha is all over the place. But that, one person could look at that as very restrictive. But that would be like the guy who's in the rehab program looks at it as restrictive. The restrictiveness is carefully designed by God in every area to really free a person from, to free a person from his compulsions and to free himself, to allow him to live rationally and to really assess his life's decisions. And for every area in life, the person who's able to think before he eats is the person who's going to be able to eat properly. The person who's able to think before he has sex is the person who's able to live properly. A guy who's able to think before he interacts and says things to other people is the person who's going to be able to live properly. Thinks before he makes decisions about whatever the case is the person who's going to be able to live a life which is going to be good for him. Guy who is able to make good, clear-minded decisions is going to be a guy who's free to really pursue that, which is truly in his best interest. So it's through the Torah. The Torah and the mitzvot is designed in a way that really, the multiple nature, the multifarious nature of the mitzvot of the Torah are such that it gets a person and really works on him in many different areas. And insofar as mitzvot feel restrictive, that's really like the restriction of the rehab program, which is it's countering a certain emotion, but it really is attained. It's designed to allow you to free yourself up from your compulsion and to be able to take a step back. If one eats kosher, so then through the fact that whenever you eat, you always think, wait a second, you take a step back. You don't just jump on the food the second you see it, but you think before you eat. So now your compulsion to eat what looks good, you have the ability to restrain that. You see a McDonald's burger and it smells, you know, good and you want to eat it, but you control yourself. So that gives you have a certain degree of control over your repetitive instinct. And you want to eat it right now, and then you have to make a bracha. You have to take a stop for a second. You have to, you know, whatever the case may be. But there's in any area, the fact that one who follows halacha and is like in a certain sense exercises the degrees of self-control and restraint involved in different areas of one's life. But it's not just restraint. And this is, I guess, what Rebbe Meir, you were getting at a little bit, is like, it's not just that one's involved in, like, restraints, just like a diet. See, because a diet, it's like, the problem is like, or the good thing about Torah is like, the restraint involves intellect. in halacha, every area of halacha is not just controlling yourself, but it's controlling yourself using your mind, and it engages your mind, and that's like your humanity. You're able to think something through. It's not just countering it with another feeling of guilt or some sort of counter emotion, but it's like the system of the Torah is on halacha is a system of great wisdom and intellect, and the study of Torah is a lot of deep intellectual ideas in Torah. And when a person is controlling himself, at the highest level, the restraint is involves the person. In fact, he always has to think, do I have to restrain myself here or do I not? And you get involved in a whole world of thought. So it's like the restraint isn't just frustrating the emotion or whatever, it's involving a person in a world of ideas, in a world of thought, concepts. And that allows the person to... it gives the person a different type of a freedom. It's not he's so to speak, he's directing his energy towards something else, towards the world of ideas, and that gives it a different flavor. I have more to say, but a question. Every mitzvah is not just restrictions. The restrictions all have concepts, like restrictions on gossip, let's say. So you have to control yourself, and it causes you to restrain yourself and control yourself and talk gossip. But there are ideas, and you could study and think, why, what's wrong with gossip, and why is it bad, and why is it harmful, why is it corrupt, why is it not true, what are the mistakes in it? You know, and in every mitzvah, if you study the thing, there's an idea that it reflects. So there's an idea of restraint of the eating, you know, and you have kosher, and then you think and teaches you an idea that, wait a second, eating isn't the root, just eating anything and being totally a slave to eating is gonna harm me, I'm going to eat unhealthy stuff. I mean, every mitzvah you could study and see, to pursue it and see why there's a true idea, which is, you know, how the mitzvah helps a person. It's not just an artificial restraint, but it brings you to ideas about the mitzvahs. And those ideas are ideas which you'll study and see why they're true and they're good for a person. You know what I mean? Freedom is, like, let's say the guy who's on drugs and he's addicted. Now he becomes free. He breaks his addiction and he has he manages to overcome the thing through some sort of a program. Now every day he faces the decision: should I take drugs or should I, do my normal life? And he decides, and he's free to make the decision. He sees the choices in front of him, he sees the consequences of the drugs, and he sees the benefits of the other life, and he chooses it. But that's he's free because he sees, he's able to see both sides and assess them and go one way. So the freedom comes, but there are necessary restrictions which enable him to have control over himself in order to make himself free. So those restrictions, I mean, he could choose it. He could choose the drugs, but he sees the consequences and doesn't. So there are restrictions which enable the person to make a true assessment of and to see the good and to go with it, to see that which is good for him and to go for it.
Right, so the freedom isn't necessarily to do what's good for the person, it's the ability to see what's good for the person.
It's the ability to choose to direct oneself towards that which is good.
Right. But if someone is forced to do that which is good, it doesn't necessarily make it.
Correct. Good. No, you're right. Right. But that's right. Correct. But the Torah doesn't force one in that sense. It just, there's halachos, and through the mitzvahs, it gives the person the ability to say,
for society, definitely would. You can't be over mitzvahs and public their consequences.
That's true.
But that's the whole idea. So it's putting the person in the proper framework to be able to see those choices.
Correct. It would be like a society which would force drug rehab on guys on the street. It would take guys who are on the street, gangs, and force them out of the thing. And yeah, so society says that even for them, they'll be free. And they'll be able to do it. They may not be ready to choose, because sometimes the addiction could be such that you're not ready to choose. So therefore, but it's still, you're putting him in a situation where he could choose. And that's giving him the freedom. So you're right, the Torah does that through a certain external means. Just like a society could do it in external means. But the goal of the thing is that it will enable him to see the thing and to break his addictions and to be able to see why it's good. So a person may not be able to see why it's good to follow a given mitzvah, but insofar as he's involved in it and he doesn't have a choice about doing it, then it will allow him to gain a certain distance from it and be able to analyze the thing and see it clearly. Yes?
Like, I see how, like, that guy, the drug addict, who realizes they've got two lines of him. He's got either addiction to drugs, or he can subject himself to these external consequences, these external restrictions, and then he'll be free to pursue things which he deem good for himself.
Right.
Like, that's a free guy. But like, what if the guy is doing it for some kind of compulsion? You know, if he sees this making his parents very upset when he's on the streets doing drugs, but in the very act when he's going to be at the facility, and he does it because of that. So he's not really doing it because he found the director's life for what he thinks is good. Like, would you say that's a free guy? Or even better, like, the guy who just keeps him missing out of a feeling of guilt or something like that, you know?
Right.
He's in some society where he'll feel very guilty if he's the only guy not doing it.
That's a good question.
Is that like a free guy, or?
That's a good question.
He's still under control of external sways.
Right.
Just because they're forgiven.
It's different.
I mean,
right.
He's free.
That's a good... So you're saying he is or isn't?
I'm saying he's not.
He's not.
Yeah, I wouldn't think about that.
Yeah, well, this actually gets... I'm happy you asked that question, because it gets to an interesting point, is that if you look carefully at the thing, it seems to be is the Ben Chorin is the person who's involved in Talmud Torah, which means, it seems to me, it's like learning Torah. It's not just rote performance of the mitzvahs. But it seems to be, I mean, I don't think Talmud Torah excludes the mitzvahs, because you're involved in Talmud Torah. Of course you do the mitzvahs. The Torah tells you, it teaches you the mitzvahs, and you do them. But I think it means it's like an oseik with Talmud Torah. You have to be involved, a person is involved in learning of Torah. And it could be that's why. Is because if you just do the mitzvahs out of a compulsion, some cultural, familial, whatever it is, then it's just a different compulsion. And it could be there's like a mitoch shel shavu lishma that through the learning itself it could help you see the truth and put you're better off probably, you know, just like the guy who's on drugs, the guy who's not doing drugs because his parents, he's closer, it's more likely he'll see the path, see the light more than a guy who's on drugs, but it's not really it. The real freedom is when the person is involved in the Torah and the mitzvot in an intellectual way, and he sees the ideas of the Torah and he sees the good of the Torah. And he's but a person, it's hard to get there. Sometimes it takes a steps to a person, his parents may have to force him, and then he'll it's for him to even look at the Torah. But then when he starts to see it, then he'll see, oh yeah, this is cool, this starts making sense. You know, but you're right, I think ultimately the real Ben Chorin is the person who's involved in the Torah in its full sense, not just the art of just doing the, you know, following the rules. Yeah.
Also, the statement didn't say that you are free if you're
involved
in college.
No.
You can only be free.
Sure, it's a good point. Sure, it's a good point. You know, there's no fruit tree free person but one who is involved in Torah. It's true. It doesn't mean it's 100% or it's necessary. That's true. But I would think, even though it doesn't say that, I think is that's true because there's different levels involving Torah. But I think is that the more a person is truly internalizes the life of Torah, he partakes of the freedom to a higher degree. You know? But that's a good point. Okay. Maybe there's something else I want to say here. And I know I have to come back to Shavuos, right? I know, but one second. There's another point. Yeah. I mean, I do think it's important. It's important to keep this in mind. Because we oftentimes forget when mitzvahs come around, or any compulsions come around. You know, we often feel like sometimes mitzvahs are a burden. And, you know, it's easy to not do to violate the Torah because of the fact that it feels oppressive and it's burdensome and no one likes to be told what to do kind of thing. You know, but if a person keeps his eye on the ball and realizes that the Torah is... thinks of it, you have to think about it. I mean, you can't just believe me. You have to really think about this. But if one realizes that breaking through following these restrictions and accepting the servitude... it's always an exercise in bringing a person towards a greater freedom. So the reason why they don't want to do the mitzvah is because they feel they want to be free to do what they want. But through the doing of the Torah, you become more free to do what you want, and more free to do that which is what you really want. And again, you have to see that idea. You can't just, I'm just saying this, but you have to think about it. I think it can be a tool in a person's daily struggles with Torah and mitzvot and decisions in life in general, is that we can't be fooled. We have to learn to see big picture sometimes and realize that the moment-to-moment decisions and compulsions, you think you feel like you want to do this because you're looking for that which is going to make you happy. But you have to realize maybe it's a compulsion, and maybe in my mind I could see that really it's on the contrary. It's taking me away from what I'm really looking for. So a short
little term control could bring me a longer term happiness and more of a sense of freedom. Because that person really has a sense of freedom. I mean, the person, I mean, both people will say they're free, but I think the person who has knowledge and sees it, who feels the freedom, you know, is more convinced about his freedom, so to speak. You know, and he can experience it, enjoy it in a larger degree. So this comes back to maybe there's another point, maybe I'll remember, but it's coming back to Geula and Pesach. So it could be, it's saying is that Geula is the freedom, the redemption from Egypt and from Mitzrayim. But the freedom of Yetzias Mitzrayim is not really complete until Torah, until the Shavuos, until the Matan Torah. The freedom is, it's its own theme, and we have to, God took us out from Paro, and he enabled us to remove the taskmasters of Mitzrayim. But the true freedom, without Torah and Mitzvos, we will still be slaves, different types of slaves, slaves to ourselves, slaves to our nature, slaves to our compulsions. But it's the slavery is only, the completion of the Geula is really, of the redemption is really with the giving of the Torah. And that's why it says that's the pasuk is cheiros, charos al luchos, is the luchos is the giving of the Torah. So the Torah is the term which is cheiros, which is the giving of the Torah, is really the culmination of the cheiros of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, and a person has to, when you reflect on the Geula, it's like you have to start counting towards Yetzias Mitzrayim, towards Matan Torah, because the freedom stopping right there. You're just free. Take slaves and free them. Now what are they going to do? You know, so now what are they going to do? So now they're going to get the Torah. They'll work towards getting the Torah. That's what really brings us right. And even in the initial freedom, the Geula, it was involved the mitzvos, right? The Pekam Pesach and Mila. They had a certain action mitzvah of Pekam Pesach, which controlled their idolatrous tendencies, and Mila, which controlled them in their sexual tendencies. So right, even in the very big, even in Geulas Mitzrayim itself, there were mitzvahs, but it wasn't the whole system of the mitzvahs. The true freedom comes from the entirety of the system. It works in a totality. I mean, of course, you can do individual mitzvahs, but the Torah is designed and as a total system. And Har Sinai was when we really became the nation that's the pasuk. It's charos, is that the luchos and the Torah, which really culminates the Geula of Mitzrayim. It could be that's the tie-in. Can't quite talk about completely talk about Pesach without talking about Shavuos, which is follows 7 weeks after. Dan?
Yeah, but in the Shemona Esrei for Shalosh Regalim, we do say Pesach is not Parasim, right? So
you say what? Yes.
Parasim in terms of Pesach.
Yes.
Right. So the Parasim isn't really complete until Shavuos. I mean, why would we?
It's a good question. It's a good question, but I would think is like that. See, in terms of in the Nisim, you have to think about like the Yontifs we're thinking about that they talked about originally is God just relating to Klal Yisrael, and like the idea of what happened in other words, what God did for us in Yetzias Mitzrayim was that he just took us out of Mitzrayim, and he brought us. I mean, you're saying is, but still, it's not really the freedom.
Right, the real freedom doesn't take place until
you're doing it from a relationship. Happened in order to bring us to Har Sinai and everything. Like, we don't have to view it like just in that specific time, was it the complete freedom or not? Meaning, it takes time to happen so that we could have all the freedom.
I'm saying it's not real freedom. The whole thing that we're saying is that there's only freedom once you actually have the whole set. I mean,
I understand. But so we know now, Yontif is like a time where it's our relationship, so we know that God did exist in time in order so that we could have the ultimate favor. And it all began in Mitzrayim. So even though we didn't accomplish the ultimate favors right then, we can still say that Mitzrayim was among the favors here.
But it's an odd time to celebrate. Why not celebrate it at the completion? Why celebrate it at one step in the process?
It's a good question. One thought maybe is like you can't be free when you're a slave in Mitzrayim. You just can't you can't devote your energies towards a life of ideas. I mean, you're totally knocked down. But when you're free, once you're taken out of Mitzrayim, you're enabled to be able to pursue that life. Your energies are free. Now, it's true, in general, a person's going to fail. in general, a person, you know, needs assistance. And the Torah is really what guides your average person to just doing it. But like the chayrus of Mitzrayim was that he removed from us the, there's like an intrinsic obstacle, which is you know, impenetrable. Is when you're slow and you're a slave and you're working 20 hours a day, or, you know, like you're being beat. That's, so the person can't do it then. You know, so the freedom, taking us out of Mitzrayim, allows for that. But then Mitzrayim, in reality, the completion of the thing, in terms of the Ma'ase Hashem, the Matan Torah is that which enables, you know, assists us and really culminates the thing. But I'd say still, there's a benefit is that it frees up our energy, and now our energies are free to be able to choose to involve them as we want, and a given Chacham could do so. But in general, I mean, as a klal, as a nation, it's really realized through the Luchos, through the Torah.
Right, but that's one of many necessary prerequisites that we would need in terms of the ability to put us in a position where we can come to these types of decisions. I mean, a person also needs to, satisfy the instinctual, you know, in order to be at that type of level. He needs to eat, you know, he needs to be, you know, he needs to be healthy. But those are all just components, and also slavery. But I mean, it seems still like just one of many steps. Why that step in particular?
Okay. Hey, what you're saying? Good question. That's a good question. Okay, that's a great question. Good question. Gosh, I mean, I think it's Talmud Torah, but I think it's the life of Talmud Torah. Like, I think it's Torah. I don't know. It's a good question. To me, it seems like it's focusing on Talmud Torah, because I think it means it's like it's the Torah, but the Torah, the life of Torah, and the ideas of Torah. So when you're involved in mitzvos with ideas, that's part of Talmud Torah. It's like the actualization of the Talmud Torah.
I was asking not Torah versus mitzvos, but Torah versus just Chachma.
Oh, I understand. Well, the thing with Chachma is it's a little tricky because it doesn't involve your life. Like a guy who's involved in physics, he could be involved the rest of the time, he could be doing all kinds of crazy things. You know, it doesn't necessarily involve your life. See, Torah involves, it talks to your life and your energies. And it's not just an abstract pursuit. It is an abstract pursuit, but it also ties in with your, what do you do? Like, you give me about physics. Okay, now what do you do when you go home? What are you going to eat? Like, how are you going to live your life? So it could be a world of ideas. And I'd say that guy is, I don't know, maybe usually freer than your average, but, you know, hedonist. What? Yeah, while he's involved in it. But a person, there's a limit to how far a person can be involved in it. It's about, you know, the rest of the time, I mean, there's energies that can be involved in all kinds of other things. You know, so there's no, it's totally, he doesn't know how to live. So, you know, it's hard to take that chachma that you used to gain from some science and then apply it to your life. See, Torah is like a mix where there's a world of ideas and chachma and, you know, abstract studies. At the same time, it talks about your life. Yeah. Okay.